Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. Rachel Malcolm is with me as always, and joining us on this podcast this week is our very own Chief Exec, Mark Dodson, to talk us through the brand new Scottish Rugby strategy. And we're also joined by Sean Lineen, Scotland Under-20s Head Coach, as they prepare for the upcoming match with Italy. Well, delighted now to be joined on the podcast by our Chief Executive, Mark Dodson. Mark, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast to talk us through the new strategy. A huge announcement that went out yesterday to all the clubs and to staff. I guess, for those who don't know, could you just tell us a little bit about this new strategy at Scottish Rugby?
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. This strategy is going to take us through from 2021 to 2024. It basically is a reshaping of our ambitions post-COVID, and it covers a wide area of business activities and also largely focuses on restarting rugby sustainably and in a safe way.
So just on the strategy, what would you say are the main priorities?
I think we've effectively got three main priorities inside of the strategy. Number one being well-being, number two being winning, and number three is women. And the reason for those three things being front of mind, the first thing is, if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's taught us about the importance of well-being, whether that's be physical well-being or mental well-being. And I think we've focused in very firmly on that with our own people here who work for Scottish Rugby, from our stakeholders and clubs that have been out there keeping clubs afloat all the way through the pandemic, and also our players, our on-field players. We work very closely with Rugby Players Scotland to make sure that they were always involved in what we've been doing, and look at the challenges some of our players have had. So we're trying to look at the well-being aspect from not only how people have been affected in the pandemic, but how are they going to be affected coming out of the pandemic? How easy is it going to be for people to onboard themselves back in the business? How do they want to work going forward? And how can we help people who've got long-term effects of COVID? How are we going to be able to make sure that we learn the lessons from the pandemic, and make sure that as a post-COVID business, we're sensitive, caring, supporting, and we're making sure that we're nurturing our people? Because one thing that's come out of this, and I'll probably come onto it later, is just how important our people have been in getting the organisation through this crisis. The second issue is around winning teams. I'm not making any apologies about putting winning into a strategy, because that's what we have to do. We're facing a brand new United Rugby Championship, which is going to be a colossally difficult tournament to play in. We've got four of the biggest South African franchises who are going to join the United Rugby Championship. And that's going to take the skill and quality to another level. And the third part is women, and the growth of the women's game is all around us. You don't have to look very far to realise that the real trigger for growth and participation is going to be women's and girls rugby. And we have to be very, very clear about what we intend to do, what our ambitions are in that area, and start to put together an overarching women's strategy, which will take us through into 2024 through to 2030 as well. And there's a large number of components that are not in place at the moment that we can address through the Growth and Participation Fund and through other funding that we're going to put in place, which will give us an overarching winning strategy, which will tail the international team right the way down to athlete acquisition at 4 and 5 years old.
Making and planning a strategy is difficult at the best of times in normal circumstances. So how has COVID affected the strategy that you've chosen in more detail?
Well, I think COVID was a massive insult to the business in terms of what it forced us to do. Prior to COVID, we had a fantastic, strong business. We had a really strong balance sheet. We were growing all the time. And I think we're getting to the stage of our evolution where the two big deals that we've been working on for 2.5 years, the selling of a stake in Pro 14 and also selling of a stake in the Six Nations, was going to offer us untold levels of cash, which the union has never had before. And it was going to allow us, if you like, to invest really wisely and for the medium and the long term around future-proofing the whole union. That pretty much stopped in March 2020 when we were hit with the pandemic, because it closed down the uni effectively. All our major revenue levers, all earnings we had, which were broadcast, which were ticketing, which were hospitality, all stopped. And so we found ourselves going from this position of relative strength to a position of real anxiety about how do we continue in the union, how do we keep people employed for this level of time. And our balance sheet was pretty badly torn about by that. What came to our rescue was an immediate cost-saving program that we went on, which everybody helped with the salary sacrifice. And I'm ever so grateful and humbled, by the way, everybody at Scottish Rugby took that forward. It was incredible to see people want the business to survive. I made a commitment at the time that we would keep everybody on board. We'd do our very, very utmost not to make redundancies and keep everybody intact. And I think that was appreciated by the people that worked for us. And I think they repaid us in spades. And I think from that point onwards, we then got the government furlough scheme, which I don't think anybody anticipated would be there. We took advantage of that. And with the government furlough scheme, our cost-saving program, and then the government grant that we got, which repaired our balance sheet to some extent. The £15 million has been spent to replace the revenue that we lost. We haven't lost all of that revenue naturally, but a huge commitment from the Scottish Government to keep Scottish Rugby going and making sure that we protected jobs and infrastructure has been hugely beneficial. But it has stopped us doing many things, and it has made us think again about what's important to us. The things that we were doing, which were perhaps not mission critical, we're no longer doing. Anything that is mission critical has been really thought through and thought, well, if you look at the way we earn our money, we earn our money from the national team. Over 70% of our cash is in from the national team. Over 20% of our cash is in from the pro teams. So between those two, let's say imagine professional rugby, if you like, professional international rugby of our national teams creates 90% of our revenue. We have to have a focus on that, because without that 90%, we can't fund the grassroots game and everything else that goes with it. So we were very singular in our approach to that. I'm quite ruthless about other things that we had to stop doing. Now, whether we restart doing those things will depend upon how our revenues come back over a period of time. But I think we've been through a real reflective period. And I think this, instead of coming out and saying that we're going to be aimed to be third in the world on this, or get to a European final, or have a new United Rugby Championship qualification, we looked at this and said, hang on, there's a bigger game at play here. And the bigger game at play is making people safe, making sure we can restart rugby safely and sustainable, looking after our stakeholders. We've taken a more holistic view rather than a quantitative and a numerical view about what our ambition should be. Our ambition should be about each other. It should be about the game itself. And it should be about making sure we can future-proof the union and the sport in Scotland for generations to come.
Definitely. And I think looking at, obviously, restarting rugby, it's brilliant to see that the club game have now got a start date of the 4th of September. From your position, how are Scottish Rugby going to help clubs with that restart to rugby?
Well, I think one of the things that we did, we had the £15 million subsidy from government in terms of a grant that repaired our balance sheet. And then we had a £5 million loan that we took advantage of. And with that £5 million loan, we're going to pay the interest on that, but put the whole £5 million straight back into the domestic game. Now, £5 million will be paid, or £1 million a year over 5 years, based on a growth and participation fund. It's there to grow the game, there to increase participation. And that's in match officials, volunteers, players, coaches, etc. But to answer your point directly, Rachel, we put together £1 million of a return to rugby fund. And that return to rugby is going to be around activities to promote the game. It's getting the game back together again, open days that we're going to drive in each and every old club, coaching clinics, player clinics. We're going to have a big publicity campaign about rugby is back, everybody's game. And these are the kind of things that we're going to make sure that people know it's safe to come back. It's going to be exciting to come back. So for the next, what we called 150 light nights, and there's probably about 110 light nights left now, but 110 light nights left, we're going to make the most of this summer. We're not going to let it go and pass us by. We will work. I'm going to get the national team coaches out to club clinics and bring people together to in individual club clusters of clubs to come together. Our pro players are going to go out there and work very, very hard. all our assets are out there with the men, male players and women players. We're going to use them. We're going to have open days. We're going to have barbecues. We're going to make sure that we have enough money and enough facilities to kindle this this restart. Because I sense from all over the country that training numbers are up. People have been waiting for it. There's not. We were terrified, I think, as everybody was. You know, what does it happen when you lose 15 months of a game? Have people found other things to do? Well, I think, yeah, they did for a while. But people are now evidencing in large numbers across the country that they're ready to come back, they're ready to play again. And what we've done with the recovery fund, we've made sure that nobody's in hardship. We've also made that we're going to have clubs that are going to be reopened safely. So we're doing checks on boilers and electrics and all the things that make a club safe when it reopens, making sure that everything works and we can have them safely reopened. And now this return to rugby fund is directly about activities that say, we want more girls, we want more women, we want more volunteers. Come down and try us. We're a friendly club. And I think what we've saw, we knew this anyway, but I think what we tried to capture, if you like, in the strategy paper is that you've got to make your club a community hub. It can't just be there on a Saturday afternoon or two nights a week for training. What else can you make the club stand for in your community? How can you have more use of the club, whether it's for Zumba classes or whether it's for child minding classes or nursery or mother and toddler groups? How do you make it focal centre of your community? And then we can bring all the rugby values that we know people love and respect, we can bring those into play and we can make ourselves sustainable in the future. So there's method in our madness, but I think in terms of reflecting on, you know, what's COVID done to us, it's made us pause, made us reflect, and then it's made us more focused on what we need to do rather than these ephemeral short-term targets. It's about, let's just make ourselves indispensable to our community.
That all sounds really exciting and promising, Mark. And another thing that I guess sounds really exciting is the launch of the United Rugby Championship this year, which was the Pro 14, but is now rebranded to include some South African teams. I know you've been kind of working on that for a long time. It's a new initiative, but with that, I guess there will be some challenges. But what's your overview of that competition and what do you expect from it?
Well, it falls neatly into our winning team strategy. We want winning teams at every level of our game. But on our professional teams for Edinburgh Rugby and also Glasgow Warriors, they've just been given a huge challenge. The United Rugby Championship is not just a change to Pro 14 to Pro 16. The four biggest franchises in South Africa are joining this new championship. And this new championship, the way I describe it, it's a bit like four Leinsters joining the competition. We're going to be Peter Steptoe, Sia Khaleesi, all coming down to play at Scotstoun and BT Murrayfield. That's going to be a huge challenge for us. And so what we've got to do is make sure our pro teams stay competitive. So what we've done, we're going to invest more money into our pro teams because we want to do two things. We want to understand that the new competition gives us a brand new opportunity. And that's because it doesn't overlap with the international season in the same way the others did, the other competition did. So in terms of autumn and in terms of the Six Nations, we won't be having players taken away during those key moments. Now, we used to lose 23, 24 players from the two teams to the national team and to other teams. So we're playing with weakened sides. So the increase in the budget will hopefully not be about player depth anymore, because we probably don't need that because we have enough players if all our players are back with us. It'll be about player quality, and that's twofold. One is to retain the best talent we have in Scotland and keep them with our clubs rather than lose them to Exeter or to Gloucester or to Racing 92. What we need to keep them in our country. And the second piece is to add a bit of stardust, a bit of you know, crackerjack players who can make a massive difference for us. So instead of signing players who are there to beef out our squad depth, they're going to be there because they're going to win games for them. Ultra special talents that will excite our fans and put more bums on seats, and that's the way we're going to make money and pay back the investment we made in the pro teams. The other thing is, Jamie, as well, we're going back into that huge South African market, and we'll be able to exploit that through broadcast rights and through sponsorship strategies and through data aggregation. There's a whole raft of stuff that we're working on there with our new partners, and I think it's going to be hugely exciting. And I think you know, if you speak to Richard Cockrell and Danny Wilson, I think they're really looking forward to it, but they're also a bit daunted because this is there's going to be no easy games in this. You've seen how the Italians are improving as well. The Welsh, I think, will redouble in their efforts to compete, and the Irish will just step up a gear. So we've got exciting times as we go through that United Rugby Championship launch.
It definitely all sounds super exciting. One thing that probably obviously jumped out to me from the strategy was the focus on the women's game. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, Rachel, you've been around with us now for a while. You know, we've tried to invest in the women's game as much as we've been able to. And I think there's a change from night and day from 5-6 years ago to where we are now. But in truth, as I don't need to tell you this, we're a long way behind other people as well. And we've got to be honest with ourselves and say, there's probably three tiers of countries in the world. There's the elite tier, which is the England, France, and the New Zealand. And then there's a second tier. And then there's a third tier. I think we're toward the bottom of the second tier. And what we need to do is to deal with that and make ourselves better. But I think what I wanted to do in this strategy is not just to concentrate on the international piece, because it's only one small component of a huge area of our business, because we're coming from such a long way back compared with some other countries. So what I've commissioned is an overarching women and girls strategy. This starts with athlete acquisition at 4 and 5 years old into minis and keeping them through the school piece and then pushing them through a domestic tournament through clubs and making sure our domestic tournament is strong enough to be good and representative and credible. And then what we want to do probably is then look at a semi or professional team that can compete maybe in a European-wide league or maybe with the English league. Will be a stepping stone then to international rugby. Now, as you know, Rachel, there's a lot that I've just described that doesn't exist at the moment. Mm-hmm. Or if it does exist, it exists in a way that's underdeveloped. So what we've got to do is to look at all these components, maybe 5 or 6 components, and start putting them in place. But now we've got the money to fund it for the first time through the deals that we've done. And so what we're going to do with that growth and participation fund is spend money wisely to get those components into this overall overarching plan. And we'll come back probably in the autumn to discuss that with everybody. But I think we know what we want to do. We just got to finesse it now. And then we had the first time we've had the money to do it. So give me an example. You'll probably, you're much closer to this than I am, Rachel, but we tell me you need more things than this. But one of the key components that missed here are regional training centres for athletes, coaching regionally, having high performance centres on a regional basis. People in Scotland have to travel too far to get meaningful coaching and meaningful progressive high performance environments. We need to put those back into clubs. Now, we have to select which clubs they are. We may have to help work with them, but we need these areas where women and girls can go and get proper coaching and get proper physio, proper S&C. And so that's one of the key components we need to do. We have to think about, do we do that through clubs? Do we do that through ourselves? Do we do that through sponsoring the athlete individually? There's several ways in which you can do that. And we'll obviously talk to you and your teammates about how you see it. How do you see us developing that in the most appropriate way possible?
No, it's super exciting and super exciting to hear all the different strands of the strategy and how kind of widespread the influence could be. Just to finish up, I guess, for our listeners, could you give us a little bit of an insight into, from your point of view, how Scottish rugby are placed now? So what kind of state are we in now following the pandemic, and how do you feel that Scottish rugby dealt with everything that they've had to go through throughout the pandemic?
Well, as I said before, we went into the pandemic as a very strong business. And we're actually emerging from the pandemic as a strong business as well. So that gives me enormous, satisfaction to be able to have led the business through that. But mostly it's down to the people who have done that. Our own people, our own resourcefulness and our own commitment to the business. I think what I've learned through, I knew I had committed people here. I just didn't realise how committed they were and what level of sacrifice they were prepared to make to get us through this crisis. The people who work here and the people that are involved in Scottish Rugby love it. They love the business. They love the thistle. They love what it stands for. And I think that came out in spades during this whole pandemic. From my point of view, we've learned a lot of lessons. There are things that we perhaps could have done quicker that we didn't do. I think we have done things consistently. I think if you ask me what the key strength of what we did, we devised a plan and we stuck to it and we didn't lose our nerve. And I think it was a very simple plan. It was effectively a plan that basically said, you know, we've got four stages of this. We've got respond, we've got reset, we've got recover, and we've got rebuild. And we didn't move out of one set of behaviours until we knew we could move into the second set of behaviours. And now we're in the recover and rebuild phase. All the work that we did then, talking to our staff, over-communicating to some extent, letting people know that we're safe, letting people know that we would be flexible, letting people know we were trying to save jobs and save the business, and tell them how we were doing that, how we dealt with the threat management group, how we dealt with pushing forward the medical briefings to Dr. James Robson, and how the teams were put into their bubbles. And as you know, it's not a pleasant experience, is it? People think, oh, must be great being an international rugby player. Well, there are a lot of other things I'd rather be doing this winter than sat in a bubble for 7 weeks, you know, and then doing nothing else. I'm sure you've got some stories on that. But the issue for me is people don't understand the amount of work and detail and scenario planning that went into that. But we were patient, we were steadfast, we stuck to the plan, and we communicated what that plan was. And amazingly enough, people rolled over their season tickets from 1 year to the next, didn't ask for money back. Our sponsors stayed with us, even though they didn't get anything like the level of exposure that they would need for their brands. Our broadcast partners pretty much stayed with us, even though they had no content to show. And our own people here also stuck with it because they knew they'd been looked after. That gives me enormous satisfaction and pride that we're an organization that has deep and meaningful relationships with even the relationship with government, where we work lockstep with them in educating, in trying to shape our knowledge of this COVID virus as it moved through. Our relationship with them prompted them to support us to a level we've never experienced before, and hopefully never have to experience again. But the issue is these relationships have stood us in good stead, and I think we're a more resilient business coming out of it.
Well, Mark, it's been brilliant to get you on the podcast to talk us through the strategy, the pandemic, and everything else in between. So thank you very much for your time, and we'll no doubt get you back on in the not-too-distant future.
Great. Always great to speak to you. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks, Rachel. Thank you.
Cheers, Mark.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, joining us on the podcast now is Scotland Under-20 head coach Sean Lanine. Sean, I know you're down in Cardiff. How are you getting on down there?
Hi, Jamie. Yep, it's great. It's great not to be wearing the mask at the moment, that's for sure. The COVID's pretty, we've got to make sure that everyone looks at the protocols and adheres to it with the competition ahead, and the Six Nations have really put something special together for the players to be involved in. But it's just exciting to be here, really.
How would you sum up, I guess, your start to the tournament and your first two games against Ireland and England?
Yeah, I suppose I'm again delighted to be down here. It's a mixture, I suppose, Rachel, of frustration and just knowing where we are as a group of young lads. Against Ireland, the red card wasn't great, but we didn't deal with it very well. We were right in the game there at half time. And against England, we were in the 22 20 times and we only converted twice. So it's really taken our opportunity. So there's real positives. It's a really young group. 17 of the 32, which is a big squad, are under 20 again next season. So it's a really young squad, but they're learning fast. I think because they haven't had their under 18 year, a lot of them, but the fact that they missed out on that, we're having to start from a long way back, if I'm being polite, in terms of behaviours and, you know, things like being on time and tidiness and all the things you take for granted, I suppose, as they begin their journey into the next level of rugby. So, you know, that's something we're working on hard. But the main thing is on the field, making sure they get out and enjoy their rugby.
Yeah, and you've got, as you said, Sean, a young group of players. But that must be also very exciting, the fact that you've got this kind of young crop of talent coming through, and exciting to see potentially what these players could become.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen, they're really good, really coachable group. As I said, it is young, but they've They've got to learn pretty quickly. But we've, you know, this is the first time we've actually had four props that are a year young. So, you know, we usually have one or two and that's it. But now we've got four youngsters, and that's without Dan Gamble, who's not with us. So there's some real good youngsters in the front row coming through, with Patrick Harrison and Duncan Hooded Hooker as well. We've got two good young locks, and Alex Samuel and Max Williamson, who will be under 20 again next season as well. And then you look at the tens, you know, Christian Townsend, Ewan Cunningham, Cammy Scott. They've got three exciting young tens as well. So, yeah, there's lots of young talent there. The coaches are having to work very hard. You know, we're working there. The players have a bowling afternoon. So we actually have a bowling green behind the hotel. We're in a pretty good hotel, Holiday Inn, which is right next to the Millennium Stadium. So it's the richest, I think, bowling club in not just in Cardiff and Wales, because they rent the car park to patrons that are going to watch the rugby at Millennium Stadium. So it's a really nice bowling green, and you won't be able to hear them at the moment, but the players are enjoying playing bowls at the moment.
I never thought the under-20s boys would be out lawn bowls, but there you go. It's a new world, isn't it? It's a new world. Good on them. Good on them.
It's not far from me, myself, though. I'll be there shortly.
So you touched a little bit on, I guess, the youth and the team, exciting talent, and obviously a tough first couple of games. There have obviously been, I imagine, as you touched on, lots of learnings from those first two games. What are you expecting to see from Italy in the third game? And what do you hope to see, I guess, off the back of that from your team off the back of their first two games?
Yeah, Rachel, one of the big things is development for the players. They've got to learn fast. You know, one of the things, this is like a Junior World Cup or a Junior World Trophy format. So, yeah, there's the game every 6 days. So it's quite a big break in between each game. But you've got to, you know, the players are learning how to live that. It's tough. It's learning about recovery, nutrition, which is a biggie. Struggling with that in terms of eating the right food. Training, analysis, meetings with the coaches. There's lots, you know, weight training. There's a lot going on that they have to get used to. Against Italy, they bring a lot of emotion. They're physical. They target this game. So it's going to be usually attritional up front. They love a scrum. But certainly they lost, I think it was 13-11 to England in the last game. So a very, it's not England, sorry, to France. So they're a good team. They're a very good team. And they had a penalty to win it in the last minute and they missed the penalty. So I'm sure they'll be champion at the bit to come at us. But look, I'm really looking forward to seeing how our players really get a hold of this game. They've trained exceptionally well this week, which is the best training they've had as they learn. We're looking ready to get out there and play them.
And Sean, I don't need to tell you about how important the under-20s programme is. We've talked about it at length before, but it is essentially that third almost pro team, isn't it? You look at the amount of exposure the boys are getting at the pro teams in Scotland. Just reiterate from your point of view, how important not only is the under-20s programme, but the fact that these guys are also getting some game time with the professional teams.
Yeah, it's massive. When you look at the number of under-20s that have come through even this year from Edinburgh and Glasgow, it's phenomenal. You know, and Glasgow, lots of, you know, Thomas Lambert, who's come good. You've got Ross Thompson not so long ago. You've got Jack Blaine, you've got Connor Boyle, you've got Rory Darge. All these lads that's just the Rufus McLean. There are so many lads that are coming through, and that's recent under-20 converts. So, yeah, it's a really important program. You know, and again, it's great that we've got this. There hasn't been a lot of preparation time because of COVID, but the guys are just, they need to play games of rugby. And develop those habits pretty quickly, you know. So that's our job as coaches, to create the right environment for them. Make sure they enjoy it as well. Make sure they, you know, they love the game of rugby. We don't want them coming away from here thinking, oh, this isn't for me. So it's really important we get the balance right, not just with the bowls. There's other things the players are going to be doing. We've put them to four groups, four boxing groups after famous boxers. They do just little tasks and competitions, table tennis competitions, etc., against each other. So, yeah, it's making sure we get that balance right. But ultimately, it's about improving them as players and as people, and ideally being not just competitive in games, but although it's a young group, we want to win games.
Touching on obviously the importance of the Six Nations for the under-20s being back. Another programme which is also coming back for Scottish rugby is the Fosrock Super Six, which you are involved with. So how important do you think it is as well that's coming back?
Oh, massive. When you look at just the players already, I think it was 31 players that played in the Super Six, only 10 games. We have to remember that as well. Super Six has only had 10 games. And I know people go on about this and that about Super Six. We've had 10 games. And I've seen a massive step up in intensity. certainly in their training, the young full-time coaches, which is a massive part of it as well, and the development of referees. And, you know, that it's just fantastic to see them. The players, I know the squads, they're developing the squads and the coaches are ready to go. The players are ready to go. It's meant to be better weather, but obviously it's Scotland, so you never know. But just looking forward to the players getting out there. And as I said, 31 players from the inaugural 10 games, 10 rounds of Super Six that have played pro rugby for Edinburgh and Glasgow already. So, you know, there's a long way to go. I'm not getting that carried away because it's just very, you know, small steps. But, you know, it's got to be the way. The level of intensity that you speak to the coaches and the players is a massive step up. And that's what they need.
And Sean, you've worked on it, you know, behind the scenes for a while now, even before it was even talked about publicly. But how important is it that we have Super Six to bridge that gap between the amateur and the professional game?
Well, as I said before, Jamie, it's really important that when you look at the fitness levels, so that, you know, I know it's only semi-professional, but just about every other rugby-playing country has a semi-professional tier. So we need that because it's not just on the field, it's off the field as well. Slowly learning about how to be even a semi-pro. And the fitness levels, I think dealing also with, because they're fitter, there's less space. So you've got to have better skills and you've got to make decisions that little bit quicker. And that's obviously, and the hits are obviously a lot higher. And that's the bridge that we need to get to with the pro game. And the players are building towards that. So yeah, they are definitely fitter. It is just so important that we have something for aspiring young players to aim for. And that's what the Super Six is about.
And then lastly, obviously, very exciting news that Free Sports have come on as a broadcast partner and are going to be showing all of the matches every Sunday. How much has that kind of boosted the programme and boosted everyone involved in it?
Oh, we're all delighted. Yes, I think it's great news. You know, you'll see the players get their little identities and whether they're running around with mullets or whatever. I think that's the new fashion, isn't it? One of the things we have learned down here, by the way, I've learned how to sing "She's a Belter." Is it that by one of those songs by?
Yeah, it's taken you that long.
That's the team song, so I'm learning the songs down here as well. Yeah, great for the young lads just to be able to, you know, be on TV. It's a big thing, and it's you know, for the oxygen of publicity, you need that, you know, to have Super Six on TV and people can see what product it is and see how it improves. So I'm absolutely delighted.
Well, Sean, it's been brilliant getting you on the podcast to discuss the under-20s. We wish you all the best of luck with the Italy match, and I'm sure we'll get you on just before the return of Super Six. Away you go and play some lawn bowls and have some fun.
Table tennis.
And we'll speak to you soon, I'm sure.
Cheers. Bye now.
Cheers. See you later.
Well, Rach, great to hear from both Sean Lanin and Mark Dodson. And one thing you know, Mark was talking about with the women's game was, you know, getting the women's game up and running up here properly and bringing players back up to play up here. So, you know, are we going to see Rachel Malcolm returning home to Scotland? Is she going to be that marquee signing he was talking about then? Is that what he was alluding to?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I'd love to move home. So, yeah, if everything works out, you never know.
But in all seriousness, though, it is exciting, isn't it, that, you know, that they are at the forefront of the minds at Scottish Rugby, that there's work to be done in the women's game. And, the stuff he was talking about sounds really exciting, and there's real hope that if we pull that off, it'd be great for the game.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the way the game, like the women's game has changed, not only in Scotland, but in the whole world, and down south in particular, you know, something does need to change, and we've seen a massive step forward. I've been involved with Scottish Rugby for about 5 years now, and like the difference between when I started to where we are in terms of support, in terms of even the young players coming through and the kind of how ready they are essentially for international rugby is brilliant and shows how far we've already come. But like he says, there's still a lot to do and it's not going to happen overnight, but it's brilliant to hear that they're putting that investment into it and they've got the money available to do it.
Now, Rach, it was a big weekend of rugby. We had the Premiership final down in England, which was an absolute crack. Did you see any of that game, by the way?
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I loved it. I started out a neutral by the end. I was a diehard Harlequins fan, but absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal game of rugby, back and forth. And the fact that Harlequins have done it 2 weeks in a row was phenomenal. I tell you that.
Well, I said last week, I don't, like, when they played obviously 100 minutes and whatever else, I was like, there's just no way they can recover. to win a Premiership in a week's time. And the fact that they came out and put in the performance they did and played the rugby they did is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And you know, the name Lina that we all know, it's synonymous with the game itself. I remember watching, this is going to show my age, but I remember watching his dad playing for Australia. And I didn't actually know this, but his father, Michael Lina's grandfather on his mother's side, is from Kilburnie in Scotland. So he could have played for Scotland if only we'd got to him sooner.
Oh. So,
go back in time, we might have changed that. But no, it was a great game. But closer to home, we had the British and Irish Lions at BT Murrayfield against Japan. Now, I know you weren't there, but I know you watched the game. How did you find it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, I think after all the build-up and all the hype, and I'm as big a fan as anyone of the Lions, so
you're
not
loving
exciting.
The content. I know you're.
Oh, I just can't. I can't get enough of it. I've said this every week, and people are probably bored of it now, but I just can't get enough of the Lions. I think that's because I've got no rugby on myself at the moment, so it's really tied me in. But no, it was brilliant to see them. I think they played well, considering it's their first outing as a team. Defensively, in particular, I thought they looked really, really sharp, well organised, clever. Defence as well, and a couple of really good standout performers as well.
It was even better to see, you know, our boys out there, you know, getting a run out. You know, Doohan, I thought was great. You know, he scored, he's now a British and Irish Lions try scorer. You know, yeah. Alan Price coming on, Roy Sutherland played well. So it's just great, isn't it? Yeah, I think you're more invested when you have more players playing. You know, I was thinking 2017, kind of watch it maybe with less intrigue, but now I'm like you, I'm bang into it because I think I'm so excited for the boys.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like everything they were doing, I was like, oh, that's got to keep track. And yeah, no, it's exciting to have that many people involved. And I think for Scottish fans, it just, like you say, raises the interest in it. And I think the fact it was at BT Murrayfield without, you know, starting there, that's pretty cool as well. So no, it's super exciting, and I think they're back out next week or the end of this week.
Yeah, I think the plan is the game, like this Saturday, their opening game, which is, you know, they arrived early Monday morning, in South Africa, and they've got a game on Saturday, and that's it. The tour is going to get going, so we'll chat about that next week. We'll review that game when Mossy's back. Now, Rach, we should probably talk about the Scotland A game that was unfortunately cancelled due to COVID-19. The Scotland squad are back up. They're isolating just now, and they'll conduct further tests and investigation to see how that all pans out. But I guess really frustrating. We had a really young squad going down there to try and get a run out and get some caps. They don't get caps, do they?
No.
We had a really young squad going down there to hopefully get a run out. So you've been in those situations before, Rachel, with postponements and cancellations. What would the players be feeling, and how frustrating is that whole process?
Yeah, it's super frustrating. And I think it's almost worse that it was an A game, because, you know, it's a lot of these guys' opportunity to get their first chance in a Scotland shirt and prove themselves ahead of the tour. So I just felt really disappointed for the guys involved, you know, the likes of Ross Thompson, who we spoke to last week. I think, you know, it was a really exciting opportunity for them, but hopefully, and I'm sure for many of them, it won't be their only opportunity. And I think they've just got to look at it as a learning. You know, it's tough coming off the back of, I think we had, I don't even know how many cancellations last year, I'm not going to begin to count them, but you know, you do come out a bit stronger as a team, and I think they've had it tough, but you know, they're in good hands in terms of being looked after by the best and James Robson. So I'm sure he's done everything he can to make sure they're all okay, which is the most important thing, and get them back fit as soon as possible, and hopefully playing some rugby soon.
Well, Rach, we talked about a few bits of rugby, but there was even more, and a good result for the Sevens.
Yeah, no, fantastic. They had the second round of their Rugby Europe competition at the weekend, and finished in bronze medal position, which is super exciting, should have some important implications, which are to be confirmed, I think. But no, really great, because it's been a tough year for them in terms of, we've obviously had a really busy 15s programme. Those girls have rolled straight into the 7s programme with no rest, and have worked really hard. So it's brilliant to see they came out with a medal. And yeah, no, brilliant. Really proud of them, and ready for them to get some rest, because I think they're all absolutely knackered, and come back to us in the 15s, ready to go to qualifiers.
You ever thought about making the switch and having a wee sevens career for a bit?
I think there would have to be some serious desperate times. I think, you know. Yeah, no, I am not fast at all, so absolutely not.
Skillful though, Rach, you can just dictate.
No, I'm not that either. Not really. I'm one of these people that just trudges through, yeah. Get through a lot of work, and that's about
you
it.
You love them all in a rock, and it's just
14
not really
minutes good. Isn't really enough time for me to show that.
You need the full.
No, I'm got joking. We've got far too much sevens talent in Scotland Women Programme. They do not need me.
Oh, well said. Well said by the captain.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, we'll be back next week with more exclusive content.